Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I hate you. I hate you.
Because I'm right.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is, finding out for the very first time, Season 7, Episode 24, Saving Ryan's Privates. Excellent. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, everyone, especially Ryan, the private haver.
Was there a Ryan in the show, or did they just introduce him for this joke?
Oh, no. There's been a Ryan all this season, pretty much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Great. Not that anyone cares. More on that anon.
Before we get into this episode and a lot of announcements, we want to tell you that Again With This, episode 172 is dropping this Friday, December 15th. Let's watch Linda Gray and Donna Mills in Ladies of the 80s, A Diva's Christmas. This is a Lifetime original movie. It stars five ladies of the 80s. We're just going to focus on the ones who played mothers to blondes on Melrose Place. But I have watched this thing. We're recording this in the Time Machine. It's kind of a joy. So I'm really looking forward to discussing this with Sarah next week. And you can find a link to that in the show notes.
Fantastic. Speaking of gifts, because of the holidays, we have some other programming notes. Next Monday, December 18th, we're bringing you an all-new call-in episode. By the time you hear this, it is too late to get your calls in for this one. But as you should know by now, we do this periodically, so you can call us anytime and tell us whatever is on your mind. 210-920-4699.
Then we will be bringing our Patreon supporters again with this 173. That's dropping December 22nd. Let's watch Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling in the New Year's Eve episode of In the Spirit with Lindsay and Curtis. QVC made a show. It's basically no different than the Tiffany Thiessen cooking show we watched last year. It was still a journey, though, and you can find the link to that in the show notes as well. You do have to register an email in order to access it on QVC, but it's free. So do that and then cancel. I don't know your life. Do whatever you want.
And then on Monday, December 25th, a day that will live in infamy, we'll be bringing two holiday-themed episodes out from behind the Patreon paywall. That's Again With This 121, Let's Watch Jack Wagner in Falling for Christmas, and episode 124, Let's Watch Heather Locklear in her first Spin City Christmas episode. We are giving ourselves the gift of not trying to stay on top of 90210MG's bullshit until the new year, so the December edition of Again With Them, which is our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, will drop Thursday, January 11th. That is for our Patreon high rollers at the $5 level and up. And there will be no Patreon episode on Friday, December 29th, since that is the fifth Friday of the month.
And then on Monday, January 1st, we will be ringing in the new year by kicking off our coverage of Dawson's Creek with the pilot. So if you have friends who used to listen to this podcast but peaced out because they didn't care about Melrose, but you know they would want to come back for this, do them a favor, give them a gift, let them know this is coming up January 1st. Easy to remember. First day of 2024, first day of Dawson's Creek on this podcast.
Yeah, you don't want to wait for this show to be over? No need. We're just braiding it in before we get to the end of Melrose.
We sure are. So all that and more is on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. If you want to join us on Patreon, it's againwiththispodcast.com/club. And if you've been on the fence, you should. Now's a good time. There's really never a bad time, but there's certainly a lot of stuff for you to enjoy once you join us there. All right, let's get into, I was going to say, speaking of lots of things to enjoy, except not really. Let's get into this episode, starting with our B plot. Michael gets counter-schemed by Audrey. We pick up where we left off. Audrey, the nurse, pulls Michael into what I thought was a hotel room. I guess it's her apartment. When we see in another shots that there's like a teddy bear and stuff. So I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. She goes crazy all over his face. But clip two.
Whoa, take it easy there, girl. Where's this coming from?
I just wanted to see what a real affair would feel like. I mean, the scam's been fun, but I think the real thing would have been better.
Yeah, well, curiosity will get us both nailed. Hey, you do remember what tomorrow is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, confession day.
Right, the hospital board meeting. All the muckety-mucks will be in the conference room.
Al burst in, sniffling and crying. I lied. I made the whole thing up. There was no affair. There was no harassment. I'm a freaking psycho.
That's right.
He enjoys it a little too much, but fortunately for us, these two co-conspirators continue reciting their scheme. The board will be so embarrassed, they will try to buy Michael's forgiveness by giving him his job back, but that won't be enough, and he will sue them. Audrey's share of the money Michael plans to get will be $150,000, which she plans to use to leave nursing and start taking acting lessons, which better late than never.
Little late.
That's a mean line to give an actor for exactly the reason of our mean joke we had to make in response.
Yeah.
However, $300,000 sounds even better to Audrey than $150,000, since she is the one who's going to look like a screwball. Michael says he's the one who lost everything. Well, she's going to miss this. And so he tells her to order room service and leaves her looking pissed, not that he notices. This is going to come back to bite him. Spoiler. The next day at the hospital, nurse Amy tells Michael he probably shouldn't be hanging around there. And also, she warned him about that nurse. And when a meeting breaks up, Michael sees Audrey not come out of it. So he races over to Peter, who also tells him to get lost. Michael says he was just in the neighborhood, but hey, how was that meeting? And Peter's like, fine. Michael suddenly decides he does have to go, actually. But if St. John's calls Peter for a recommendation, Peter should give it, please. Which, like, I know they are still partners in the practice. I would not necessarily assume that Peter would give Michael a recommendation on any front, honestly.
Mm-mm.
He might as well give it a shot, though. So Michael goes straight to the locker room where poor Stephanie Cameron is being asked to show the audience some different white lingerie. She's in a nurse dress that buttons all the way up the front so you can see her bra and her underwears. So Michael locks the door and demands to know what happened. Well, she's thought about it, decided even though she's going to end up with some money, she'll also be alone, and Michael is the most fascinating man she's ever met. And if she goes to Peter right now, Michael says, he will give her $200,000, but that's not what she wants. And before they can negotiate further, someone comes to the locked door. Michael climbs out a window and falls onto a hedge. That says to the woman outside, oh, eating her lunch, when they throw you out of this place, they really throw you out, which, like, fine. I chuckled.
Yeah, me too.
So Michael gets back to the complex later. Jane's dancing around to mariachi music in her swimsuit. He reaches in the window and turns off the stereo to say he doesn't know how she can afford to go on vacation. She tells him it's a business trip, which we will hear about in the A-plot, though here is a little preview, clip three.
It's the Passion Island Resorts account in Cabo.
Okay, the client is not Passion Ireland. Just, come on. One more take. It's so rude what they do these people.
Truly.
So Michael yells through the closed window that he needs Jane in town. She yells back that if he's lonely, he can call that bimbo, and things get worse for him. Clip four.
St. John's never called.
They will.
The rent checks due. You paying for Jane's too?
She pays her own.
Oh, I just love the timing of that. Like, I wanted there to be a third person, like, you're getting audited. Just it keeps going down the line.
Comedy tonight. Yeah, yeah, totally.
So when we see Michael again, he's sniping at Jane as she leaves for Mexico. When she has gone, Megan leans in to get a whiff of the cologne she knows Michael only wears when he's planning to get laid. He wants to know how he can get away with anything with all his ex-wives hanging around, which, you know, the dead ones could be there too, could be worse.
Mm.
Megan was possibly right, though, because then Michael is at Audrey's again. She rhetorically asks who he is, and he says he's just a normal guy, no more or less rotten than anyone else. Like a volcano, he goes along dormant and then suddenly erupts with a need for power or money or attention. And Audrey basically ignores that whole weird non sequitur of a speech and says she's been holding out for him. She turns him around and they start making out, ending up on the floor. And the timing of this, like, I know Michael is a dog. Like, that's the whole point of Michael. But as we're recording this, we're in the timeline where, like, Matthew Perry has just died, RIP, and there's been reporting about how the writers of Friends were going to do a plot line where he cheated, Chandler cheated on Monica, and he was like, you can't. Chandler will never come back from that. And, like, obviously, this is a really different kind of a show, but I really thought we're close enough to the end that they were committed to Michael's, like, I really only ever loved Jane arc. So not to be like a mark with this, but I'm really like, come on, her, like of all the people he could be cheating on Jane with at this point in the show, I kind of hate this and I feel like an idiot for hating it as much as I do.
I don't hate it because I can't get it up to hate anything about this. It's just sure. Like, you know, while I am propping up my eyelids with toothpicks, how do I think I feel as I'm trying not to fall asleep? But they absolutely have been sending him in a, it's like they borrowed whoever was writing for Steve and Janet on the other show. And that's how they were writing Michael and Jane, which is like, all right, this is boring. But like in this timeline, we know we only have a dozen episodes of it left.
Yeah.
So just let him be, let him transition into that Steve zone. And then let's just sunset the character as an evil manipulator. So, but that's been going on for long enough that this like return to a heel turn is not working.
Yeah.
So I'm not like mad about it, but I agree with you that this is like, just leave it. Nobody cares anymore anyway.
Right. Yes. And especially with this woman who like we met in literally the previous episode. Like she's brand new. Like if you wanted this to have any impact, obviously I know that there's the scheme around it and that's why it's happening from a plot perspective. But like if you want us to maybe care, I won't go so far to say care, period. But like Lexi is also here. Like, and she would make more sense for him to have a reason to fool around with her.
Yeah. She has much better hair.
God, she like, sure does. Ooh,
anyway. You don't have a lot of good acting to choose from, but you got some good hair.
True. All right, let's wrap this up as quickly as we can. The next night, Michael shows up at Audrey's yet again with flowers. She says she knows are insincere, but she will take them anyway. Michael claims their night awakened real feelings in him, and in her, it awakened a full-page list of demands. Clip 5.
Number 1. When I come forward declaring myself a liar and fraud, you will pay me a $300,000 cut of your settlement, and you will promise to continue our relationship.
Now, Audrey, now this, it's not that we can't work this out or anything, because I'd like...
Look, I know your plan, once you were exonerated, was to get your wife back. But you'll just have to scrap that, Michael. I mean, really, do you want someone back who didn't stand behind you?
This is blackmail, you know that, right?
We're compatible. We look good together. We're both greedy and horny and not particularly honest. In a perverse way, we belong together. So do you agree to my terms?
Well, I mean, do I have any choice? Of course I agree.
Wise choice, doctor.
This was fine when it was Sydney doing it because it was Laura Layton doing it. And you're not Laura Layton.
No.
Beat it.
Alas, well, I mean, she does beat it, but not the way you want, because few more fucking, and as they're fooling around, Audrey grabs a remote from the nightstand drawer, somehow without his noticing. And I made a GIF, and you'll see how long she, like, faffs around with it, where it's like, it would be impossible not to be like, what are you doing? But she uses it to turn on a camera. She's hidden near the foot of the bed, which, like, they've done this before on this show as well with Jane, but fine.
Yep.
The next day, Audrey goes to Peter's office and tells him she made the whole thing up and everything Michael said was true. Her hair is even more hideous in this scene. Instead of just being the helmet, they've like done the late 90s like flips, but it's too helmety for the full Sally Hershberger to work. You can see it in the visual aids, unfortunately.
Sally Hershberger. That reference is a time for sure.
She offers to quit, but Peter grins that she did the right thing, telling him, which she did. And she asks if it's too late for Michael's career, but Peter will take care of him. So Michael's at the practice looking at a brochure when he hears the door. And when Peter walks in, Michael's pretending to be on the phone to a hospital in Montana, begging for any job. He notices that Peter is not looking well, and Peter repeats what Audrey told him. Obviously, Michael can have his old job back, and Peter will get him a formal apology from the board and also personally apologizes as a friend for Michael's inconvenience. Peter holds out his hand to shake. Michael withholds his, melodramatically setting up his lawsuit threat. You know, his trauma, how can he function in this environment, etc. Peter leaves, Michael looks smug, and that night he opens the door to Jane, back early from Mexico for reasons we will get to. She just ran into Peter, who told her all about Audrey, and Jane is sorry for judging Michael on who he used to be, not who he is. Michael says he only cared about losing her, not his job or anything else, but she says she's right there and they make out, and that's where we leave this for now, annoyingly. Onward to the A-plot. Kyle's impetuous actions have collateral effects on Ricky G, of all people, and Ryan has more hassle than expected on a business trip to Mexico with Jane. It is still the night of the big scrap between Mac McBride and Kyle as Amanda meets Ryan in Kyle's office. After what we saw, Ryan took Mac home, and when he came back to the club, Kyle was gone. Also gone, Mac. Because John Riley is not in this episode, and I'll have more to say about that. We'll get to it. So Amanda soon finds, I guess, a different incriminating baggie of pills after the one that we saw him flush in the magic toilet in that episode recently. She asks if they are Kyle's, but Ryan won't talk about it until Amanda's like, are they? And then Ryan's like, fine. And then she looks over and sees the house blueprints rolled out on the couch and thinks she knows where he is. And she's right, but she probably doesn't guess he's going to be pouring gasoline all over the frame of the house and then chucking the gas can through a window when she finds him. He tells her to stay back, but she sees his matches and begs him not to set fire to the nursery. Good Lord. And he says it, unclear, began here and it's going to end here. And trying to get him not to drop the matchbook he just lit on fire, Amanda says she knows about the drugs. This house is their dream together. But the dream is dead, says Kyle, dropping the matches and sending everything up in flames. Clip six.
Boy, why are you doing this?
I can't give you a baby.
What?
I'm sterile. Something I picked up in the Gulf, sir!
Okay.
Oh my God. I hope nobody else wanted to do what he acted in calendar year 1999, because Estes took all of it.
We're going to talk more about that, too, and why certain choices are being allowed to happen, but...
God. Can we also note that he runs off from the scene like Molly Shannon's Seinfeld character who doesn't move her arms? Like, yes. Oh my God, actor, direct thyself. Oh, wait.
Well, yes. So he takes off weirdly running. Amanda's left to watch the house burn. And after the credits the next day, firefighters are doing whatever to the charred remains of the dream house. As Amanda sits on the side of a truck watching sadly, Ryan gets out of his car. Of course, it is also a convertible. That's the law. He's a character on this show.
Well, and it's a Mustang convertible. It's
it
the
sure
Brandon
is.
Car. It's
yes.
just red.
It's
Did
red.
They get a rate?
Yeah. I mean, Jason Priestley was already gone from 90210 at this point, so maybe it's the same car and they just painted it. Dunno. But this is when we see the episode was directed by Rob Estes. So therefore, all of his worst instincts are going to be indulged and then some.
Oh, yeah.
So Ryan can't find Kyle anywhere, which seems like something he could have called Amanda's cell phone to say instead of driving the way the fuck out to Malibu. He thinks she should get some sleep. She's evidently been stewing about why Kyle didn't tell her about his diagnosis as soon as he knew. Ryan says Kyle didn't want to disappoint her, which is rather rich given that they're both inhaling the smoke from the last thing Kyle did to disappoint her. But all Amanda wants is Kyle. over to Lexi's bed, where I guess she's been using Ryan's headshot as an aid to her self-gratification based on how this is framed. I mean, there's a gif. There's kind of no other way to interpret what we're seeing. And if that's the case, it's sad because this photo is like a third generation fax. It's like so blurry and weird and black and white. Ma'am, just buy some porn, seriously. But she talks to herself about knowing everything about Ryan except how to make him fall in love with her. And that's when Megan calls to say she's going to be late for work because of all Kyle's bullshit. Clip 7.
You know, I'm not surprised about any of this. I just wonder how Kyle found out. I mean, I certainly didn't tell him, but, you know, Amanda and Peter weren't exactly being discreet in that hotel lobby.
I don't know what you're talking about. This has nothing to do with Peter.
Well, Megan, then.
We'll see.
Megan tells Lexi the actual reason that Kyle flipped out and asks, what's this about a hotel? And Lexi's like, nothing. Listen, I want to help. So where is Ryan, please? He is at the rock and roll club. So he's at the club. Megan's staying at the complex. Where else do they think Kyle might go? The other places are hospital, Eclipse, Halfway House Cafe, end of list. Oh, stage bar. That stupid bar.
Right.
None of those places are being staked out by anyone, as far as we know. But Amanda goes to the Hollywood cop shop. We see her coming out dressed like Shaft in a crop top at the cop shop. Did not mean to rhyme that, but here we are. They can't do anything until Kyle has been missing for 48 hours. Ryan reports as Lexi, who has come to the club to hang around him. She's eavesdropping, as Ryan says, the president of the Passion Island, not Ireland, resort company has invited reps from a bunch of agencies to a singles resort in Cabo for a pitch competition. Amanda on the phone can't think about that right now. And when Ryan has hung up, Lexi claims her fake company's been summoned too. Ryan thinks Amanda will probably send him, but he can't think about that now with Kyle. Lexi briefly expresses sympathy for Ryan and then swerves to say she found her Mr. Right. Clip 8.
He's just a regular old Joe, too. Nothing exotic or put on. Sincere. The guy sweats it. He's got just the right combination of modesty and shyness, and it's really a killer combination all around, wouldn't you say?
When's the wedding?
Well, we have to have our date first. We still haven't had that all-important first date.
Right. Well, I will keep my fingers crossed for you.
Well, is there anything I can do for you? I mean, my afternoon's pretty light.
Well, you can hang out here, man the phones, keep an eye out for Kyle. I'm gonna hit the streets.
All right, well, what do I do if he walks in? Should I hit him over the head or tie him to the piano?
You can call my cell phone.
Oh my God. Hints. Take them, please. So unbearable.
The resistance to flirting is determined. You almost have to admire it.
Yeah, well done by this actor, whose name I have once again forgotten. Sorry, privates guy.
There's a James and a John and a Howard. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He's dead now. He's not dead. He's alive, I think. As soon as he's gone, Lexi ties up the line, calling Julie to say they have to drop everything and go after Passion Island because she was lying before. And when Amanda gets home later, Peter asks about Kyle. There is no update, but she'd love a glass of wine, and he is happy to have her in for one while Eve is still in San Francisco. But nothing happens. Inside, Amanda quietly guesses that Peter knew about Kyle's situation all along, and he tells her what we already know, including having told Kyle to tell Amanda. She says Kyle can be stubborn. She's so worried about him, and they hug, and we yearn, and then we have to go back to fucking Kyle. Rob Estes is at like a 37 on a scale of 1 to 10 acting wise.
Oh my God.
He's drinking on a basketball court and like you don't want to say Estes the actor is taking advantage of the fact that Estes the director is not reining him in at all, but like clip 9.
Situation sucks. Sir! I'm shooting nothing but blanks. Objective is lost. Fall back! Fall back!
Had a feeling you'd be here, Kyle.
Sorry, can I just interrupt for a sec to say, if you imagine this as Ronnie Dobbs, it also works. No, you're obviously an intoxicated officer.
No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ran away as a kid, it was always down to the barracks gym.
Enlisted men only.
Come on, let's get you home.
You go to hell, I don't have a home anymore, okay? I burn it down.
You have a wife, Kyle. She's worried sick about you.
Yeah.
Come on.
I bet she has all kinds of crap to say, but you tell her I don't want to hear it. You understand? Oh, Bob was right. Bastard.
Oh, feel sorry for yourself, Kyle. That's perfect.
Oh, Lord bless you. I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. That's the problem here. That's her problem. She needs perfect. She deserves perfect.
That's a load of crap, Kyle.
What?
It's just a lot.
I like the part where he's got a line to deliver drunk, uh-huh. And then he kind of forgets, and then he just like makes the last word really drunk. Like, I don't know how to send you a letter because I don't know your zip code.
Hands near the face indicating that I've now been complaining about for like a month in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Like, do you remember that Family Ties episode where the dad has to like be the Girl Guides leader of Jennifer's troop, and the Girl Guides, I don't know what it's called on the show, like Bluebird Girls or whatever. Like they have a flower opening, but it's the hands next to the face, like the petals blooming. This is Rob Estes' acting for the last month on the show. It is, he's not Laurence Olivier, but he's not that bad when he doesn't do everything else with the indicating, but this is just completely over the top. It did kind of pass through to amusing, but barely.
So Ryan shoots a basket, and then this becomes a very lopsided sports-based conflict as Kyle cowers drunkenly, and Ryan goads Kyle to beat him and then gets in Kyle's face to say the one that Kyle really hates right now is himself, Clip 10.
Yeah, Dad raised us perfect little Marines, didn't he? We had to be perfect. We were a disappointment. I went off, forged my own life. You stuck it out. You climbed mountains, didn't you, Kyle? Nothing was too dangerous.
Give me that ball.
And when you fell hard, Kyle. You're not perfect. You're human.
Well, you're definitely not perfect. Right about that.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyle sobs that he hates Ryan, but it's just because he knows Ryan is right, says Ryan. And for the first time in Kyle's life, he can't beat Ryan. And Kyle clings to Ryan, sobbing and snorting that he just wants Amanda back. He's so sorry. And the scene cuts to the act break. With a long shot of Ryan and Kyle like the fucking Pieta. Like, I swear to God, it is so, so melodramatic. Someone really thought he was doing something here. That someone is Rob Estes.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The next morning, Amanda comes out to find Kyle pitifully waiting for her on the stairs. She is not concerned about the stink of his day-long bender and hugs him as she says how worried she was. He is sorry about the house. Amanda understands and says it was as much her fault. Okay. I mean, I don't see it, but that's nice of you, I guess.
Also, shouldn't there be felony charges pending?
Right.
Like, it was an arson.
It definitely was.
Okay. Whatever, Melrose. Just keep going.
So he at least tells Amanda she had nothing to do with this, but she thinks she put pressure on him and didn't listen to him. He says he put the pressure on himself. He wanted to be a perfect man, and when he wasn't, he didn't know how to tell her. But he is the most perfect man ever, she says. I mean, come on. Anyway, he's always given her everything she needed. He's sensitive, and the only family she ever needs. He just has to promise he's never going to leave her again, and he won't, and he also promises to get off the booze and the pills. Over to Lexi's fake office, where she loiters around Ryan like a giddy schoolgirl, saying how happy she is about Kyle, while he's like, can I go see my girlfriend now? And then she stands at the door as Ryan gives Megan all the Kyle updates you would think that she would have already gotten since they live in the same apartment complex, and watching for him there was her assignment. Ryan also says Mac is on his way home now, which, not that anyone would have expected or wanted him to help look for Kyle since he was part of the reason Kyle left, but that is a hilarious way of hand-waving having only had John Riley for one episode. Like, what was he doing all day while this was going on? Shopping? Like, only now is he gone? Yeah. You
he
dropped
really
him at the mall?
He likes to get to the airport really early.
Well, he is a dad, so that would scan.
That's true.
Anyway, Ryan tells Megan he's going to Passion Island. Julie comes in to get the Flanagan file, but actually to turn the mic on Megan's phone so Lexi can eavesdrop. And as Julie leaves and Megan tells Ryan that Lexi's going after the account, Ryan thinks Megan should convince Lexi to send her so that they can have fun being there together. And then Lexi watches Ryan leave, plays dumb as Megan comes in asking to go. And Lexi says when she finds out Ryan's going, or finds out, says Megan can't because conflict of interest. And curtly, Megan asks who Lexi is going to send. Of course, Lexi's going to send herself. And that night at the Rock and Roll Club, Ricky reads a review from the San Francisco Zone, clip 11.
Opening act, the sharp objects got the room stomping with several harder than rock originals. Notable was lead singer Eve Cleary, whose sultry get-down good looks and soulful renditions didn't hurt things. Watch for these headliners in the future. I bet that's the best review you ever got, huh?
Yeah, probably. Didn't Eve Cleary write this? Harder than rock? What the fuck are you talking about, zone guy?
I love the idea that there's a newsletter from the prison somewhere where her past performances got reviewed by someone probably just as horny for Eve as this presumably male reviewer was. Anyway, Amanda rolls in asking if she should address him as Mr. G or just Ricky, and he responds with a witless pickup line. She shuts him down. He's been a bad influence on Kyle. He does not deny having supplied Kyle with drugs, and clip 12.
You're fired. Take your sharp objects with you.
Hey, we're the house band. Kyle hired us. I mean, only Kyle can fire us.
Well, I am half owner of this house, and I want you out of here, or I call the police. Hey, Ricky, I'll handle it. Hey, you can't do this. This is my career you're messing with.
Look, I'm sorry.
Did Peter put you up to this? Because it's no secret he hates the band and the time I'm spending on it.
They're bums, okay? They're a horrible influence on anyone they're around. And no, Peter had nothing to do with this decision.
Neither did Kyle, apparently.
Kyle's not here, so I'm making the decisions, and you'll just have to live with them.
Finally.
I mean, yes. Like, all of this makes no sense.
Yeah. Not how bands work.
No. Nope.
Not how rock and roll works.
No.
Not how rock and roll clubs work.
No. But... Mm-mm. If it means Ricky G is on his way out, I will decide to overlook all of that, because enough already with this guy. Back to the complex as Megan waylays Ryan for a goodbye kiss as he heads to the airport. Clip 13.
Oh, I am so jealous. Salsa, sunsets, pina coladas.
Mm. Oh, and me.
Hey, yeah, Amanda wanted Jane to go as well.
Well, it's my second big shot at an account. I mean, after Alex Bastion, it could be my last.
Yeah, we better get going. The limo's out front.
Great. Don't worry, I'll keep an eye on him.
I guess it's just mostly the hair, but Jane has transitioned into her Daffy mom face so firmly. Mm-hmm. Like, she spiritually has Crocs on as she comes out being like, I'm coming too! Like, she just seems like the weird, awkward mom figure of, like, ruining Ryan's fun, sexy, good time.
Yeah, spiritual cross. Amazing. Yeah, put on a dress over pants. Why not? Lean into it.
I say that as a Crocs owner, I should say. I am also spiritually Crocs wearing most of the time. Upstairs, Kyle's wrapped in a blanket watching basketball when the cable goes out and he loses it, relatably. He actually shushes the television as he turns down the static noise and then runs to the fridge, finds a bottle of vodka in the freezer, drinks its entire contents in a gulp, and then smashes the bottle on the counter, fucking up his hand. No offense to Amanda. She should maybe be spending less time yelling at Ratface boobs and more time watching this man who has been hanging by a thread for like a full month. Just saying. Call Ricky and fire him over the phone.
Yeah.
And sure enough, when Amanda comes home to a pile of shattered bloody glass all over her kitchen, she realizes she fucked up and finds Kyle in the bedroom holding his bloody hand and sobbing that he's sorry. He thought he could do it, but he can't. He needs help. Which, like, duh. And the next morning, Peter walks Kyle out after checking on whatever they did with Kyle's hand in the ER last night, presumably. Peter also asks someone for new blood work for Kyle, and when Kyle has walked on in shame, Peter explains to Amanda that he's sending Kyle to a rehab in Pasadena. She admits she's still shaken up from the previous night. Peter says that's why Kyle will be better off in a facility right now. And down the hall, Kyle watches them hug and then steps into an elevator, hating himself. Like, even Kyle wants them to get back together. He doesn't. But let's pretend. In Cabo, the characters we know are sycophantically following around the Paradise Island CEO, Leo Turnlow, as he talks up the resort and the upcoming beach games, but as soon as he is left, they immediately talk shit about him. Lexi comes up with a slogan on the fly, "More fun than a village of idiots," which is one of the wittier things she's ever said, honestly.
It's true.
Jane excuses herself for the night, and when Ryan tries to follow, Lexi suggests a walk on the beach or a look at the three-legged race course, which, of course, three legs is what she's hoping for with Ryan, but for some reason, he agrees. And on the beach, she looks weirdly pissed and declines to tell Ryan more about her great new guy. When he says it's too bad she had to leave town so soon after meeting him, she thinks it worked out for the best. She hates doing too much too fast, and how does anyone really know when they've found Mr. or Miss Right anyway? She's not sure Megan is Ryan's Miss Perfect, she adds. And instead of seeing through this very obvious gambit, Ryan asks, who is? Lexi thinks Ryan needs someone more substantial and lists all the qualities I guess she thinks she has, although given her go-to move of implying that any man who rejects her is gay until he proves her wrong by fucking her, I'm not sure I would call Lexi progressive. But Ryan's only requirement for a mate is that she never stops surprising him, which is when Lexi leans in and kisses him. He pulls back. She apologizes breathlessly, but she surprised him, didn't she? He was more surprised by the apology than the kiss and leaves her looking furious. And then, oh my God, we're at a mental institution with bars on the windows as a couple of orderlies pull a sweaty Kyle up and lead him in a straitjacket up a hall. He sees Amanda and Peter kissing through the doors at the end of the hall, but when he runs toward them, a barred gate comes down from the ceiling and he smashes himself against it. And Amanda looks straight through the glass and shoots him a dead-eyed smile. And clip 14.
No!
And then he eats a hot dog.
I did not know his mouth could get that wide, but
no.
We've all learned something today, as he does. Too much! And then...
Yeah. Welcome to Rob Estes' uvula, everybody. Please drive safely. We'll be here a while.
He then wakes up in the car, and I assume he woke himself up yelling in his own head because this was all a terrible nightmare. So then Amanda drops Kyle off at the rehab center. He wants to say goodbye outside, and when she says she hates this, he promises it's not forever. He needs her to believe in him. They hug, and clip 15.
I want you to close your eyes and don't open them till I'm gone.
This seems like...
I'm doing it right now. Are you gone yet? Are you gone yet? Are you gone yet? No? How about now? Are you gone yet?
This seems like some kind of drug user's trickery where it's like, I'll totally go inside. Just keep your eyes closed. But he actually does go inside.
I also thought that might be it, but then I was like, oh right, he's not that smart.
No. And the next day, the three-legged race kicks off with a starter's pistol, which seems like overkill. Lexi is a tough competitor, but she's with Jane, who falls, letting Ryan and Leo win. Jane thinks she sprained her ankle, and Ryan helps her up to take her to the doctor as Leo tells Lexi that Jane won herself points, letting the boss win. Take a hint, Lexi, geez. And that night at the rock and roll club, Eve comes into Kyle's office to find Amanda complaining about how dead it is. If Eve can scrounge up a band, will she sing? No, actually, Eve is there to quit. Clip 16.
Well, that's funny.
I'm dead serious. I've just decided I'm not letting you hold me back any longer.
Headlining here every night, that's holding you back?
You shouldn't have fired the band. You're blaming them for Kyle's problems. You're blaming me when the person you should be blaming is yourself.
You know what? I'm tired of your constant commentary on my life.
And I am sick of you constantly running my life. I'm not your pet, Amanda.
Go ahead, fine. Get out. Go. You're sick of me running your life. I am sick of you dumping on me. I'm sick of the whole world dumping on me.
When you dump on enough people, they always dump back. That's life.
You're the expert.
Learn from the best, Amanda. You.
Forget you, Dad. What?
Yeah, I don't know who really won this having the last word competition. I feel like no one. They were both not great.
Agree. Also, Heather Locklear very obviously had a cold this week, so maybe that's why everybody was just marching through this with no second takes.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's that Rob Estes is not good at this. Something to think about.
Out on the floor, Eve finds out that Ricky has not booked the band anywhere yet. He has a drink in his hand, and Eve looks like she's already regretting throwing her lot in with him as he ambles off to tell Amanda she owes him a check and plane fare back home. Amanda tells him to leave her an address to mail it because she's leaving, but clip 17.
No, money now. Bitch, home can wait. Looks like a checkbook to me right there. $2,000, make it out to cash.
I think that's a little steep.
No, look, it was half in New York, half when I got home. Man, I carried the dude for a month. You know, if you're a little short, just take it out of your dream house account like Kyle did.
Get your ass out of this office.
Look, maybe you talk to that whipped husband of yours that way, but not to Ricky G.
You have 2 seconds to get your scummy hands off of me.
Now, lady, you got 2 seconds to write me a check.
Seriously, you could kick that guy to death. Yes. Anyone could.
It's true. Also, no one sounds tough when they're talking about checks. Like,
yeah, you know, seriously.
The Jerry Seinfeld joke about, like, it's like writing an IOU as an adult. Like, I have all this money. Trust me. Just go ask them. They'll tell you. It's like, yeah, checks are not cool. Anyway, downstairs, Eve is anxiously watching the stairs when Peter comes to pick her up and she gets in the car looking terrified. And then, content warning for this final scene, attempted sexual assault. Upstairs, Amanda hands Ricky his check and orders him to leave. And instead of doing so, clip 18.
You like bad boys, don't you? Maybe not now, but I bet you used to. And I bet this whole check that you miss it. You know, the drugs, partying, rough sex.
So this fucking predictable pig just calls that foreplay and attacks Amanda, but not for long before Peter and Eve run in and rescue her. And when Amanda falls gratefully into Peter's arms, Eve sees what the rest of us do. But that's where we leave it for today. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Mac? Escaped without having to deal with Rob Estes's quote direction unquote. And was at LAX in plenty of time for his flight, apparently.
I'll say Peter. He gets rooked by Michael, but I feel like that's not the end of the story, probably. And, you know, he rescues Amanda, he gives her wine, he is cute. All those things we want Peter to be.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Least valuable player. Ricky G. Fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, there's 2 Rob Esteses to choose from. So I'd have taken either of those as well. But Ricky G is the obvious choice. Speaking of obvious choices, next time on Again With This, calling us. It's an obvious choice. Curly cords and crack pottery. It's a call-in show. We'll be answering your questions, contemplating your theories, and feeling your pain. And while you have missed the cutoff for this show, we will keep doing them, and you can call or text us anytime at 210-920-4699. You can also feel the pain of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can find out more about our Patreon at againwiththispodcast.com/club if you haven't already. And we are on Blue Sky. Just search Again With This. I'm overpraised opening act Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Expedient Tropical Work Trip, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, wants you to close your ears and don't open them till he's gone. Talk to you next time.
No!
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.